Hello, everybody. Wake up. Here we are. It is the Meet the Pros interview program. Glad to have everybody on board. I expect a few more to join us. I know we've got some people coming in from the East Coast and the West Coast and from down south. Probably have someone as far up as Canada. And I did let some people know from Asia that this is going on. So I expect the room to fill up pretty quickly. This program is going to be a very special issue. I'm very excited about who we've got on tonight. It is our intention to bring you the top professionals in the field of hypnosis who can give you the inside scoop on hypnosis, the hypnosis business, and our profession, as well as related topics such as NLP and self-help. Let me tell you about who we've got on tonight. Ron Esslinger, CRNAMABCHCI. This guy's got it all. But let me tell you a couple more things before I get going about Ron Esslinger and why we should listen to him. I'm going to be glancing at his curriculum vitae as I do this so that you can get an idea of the quality of the man that we have with us today. Certified registered nurse and ethicist, Master of Arts degree, board certified hypnotherapist, certified instructor of hypnosis with the NGH. Ron Esslinger, who was nominated by the Department of the Navy to represent the Department of Defense as an ex officio member of the National Institutes of Health Services Committee on Complementary and Alternative Therapy, and the National Guild of Hypnotists receiver of the Researcher of the Year Award for 2003. Let me continue. Just hang on there. A retired United States Navy captain. His many assignments include senior nurse executive and director for patient services, the Naval Hospital, Beaufort, South Carolina, 2001 to 2003. From 1996 to 2001, Ron was the chief certified registered nurse and ethicist. I read a little bit further down. While at Portsmouth, Ron served on the Clinical Competency Committee for the Naval School of Health Sciences Nurse Anesthetist Program. He was the representative for licensed independent practitioners on the Naval Medical Center's Executive Committee for Medical Staff. He was granted the title of approved consultant by the American Society of Clinical Hypnosis and is a certified hypnosis instructor with the National Guild and the American Board of Hypnotherapy. Ron has developed a hypnotherapy clinic on board six naval vessels, including the battleship USS New Jersey, and the list goes on. I'm really proud to have Ron here with us. He's a good friend of mine. We go all the way back to certified instructors training. You're going to find he has a great sense of humor. Ron, thanks for coming aboard. Excuse the Navy term there. Ron's retired now. Ron, tell us about how you got interested in hypnosis and eventually using it to help people with pain.
Well, let's start off with when you come down to see me, Cal, you can sit in my Orman McGill chair, okay? Now, let's go ahead. How did I get started in hypnosis? Well, I needed a senior science project a few years back. I don't say how many years. And having a sister who was just the right age at 14 and me being a senior in high school, I chose her after reading a book called The Search for Bridie Murphy. And in the process of that, I got very interested in hypnosis. And when I got into anesthesia school a few years later, there was a school available down in New Orleans when there was a New Orleans. And I went to that school and was taught by another nurse anesthetist. And from that moment on, that was 1978. In 1979, I opened my own Knoxville Center for Clinical Hypnosis and had that for about 4 years. Gosh, the list goes on and on of the training and the places and the things I've done. And you're right about using it in the Navy and in the on the ships. Also, I was lucky enough, and how I really got into pain was back in the days in the 70s, we didn't have epidurals and we didn't have a lot of the, we didn't have any of the pain clinics that we have today. So when some of the very sick patients in those days needed surgery or needed, or had problems, I was the only one around, so they called on me. And then what happened was, as I got more interested in it and got into the Navy with it and got on ships where we didn't have a lot of things we could use for pain or a lot of claustrophobia, a lot of sleepwalkers, that type of stuff, I got involved. But then at Portsmouth Naval Hospital, I was given the opportunity to work with a pain group, and out of working with that pain group, I was brought down into the pain clinic for 4 years, and one day a week for 4 years, I saw eight patients every Wednesday for some type of chronic pain, and in some cases acute pain, but mostly chronic pain syndrome. And also while I was there, I got to spend about at least one 24-hour period every week using hypnosis and doing anesthesia in the OB department for labor and delivery. So that's kind of where I started and what happened.
All right, good. Ron, tell us a little bit about how, well, really the role of hypnosis in evidence-based medicine.
Well, interesting that you talk about evidence-based medicine, because that's kind of the key word now, or the phrase, of anything that you want to do. And hypnosis is becoming more and more evidence-based every day. Yale just came out with a article last week, a research project, of where they were preparing their patients for surgery using hypnosis. I started doing that in 1979 and made my first cassette tape for preparing people for surgery in 1984, and then for the ones during surgery in 1984. Yeah, everybody's seen the stuff done out of Harvard University where they've done the PET scans and seeing where the brain changes when they go into hypnosis. You can see it by color identification. If you've not seen that, you can log onto their website and find that. Evidence-based basically means this. It has some research to back up what we claim. And let me give you an area where we've not done research, but we make a lot of what we call anecdotal comments, and that one is on sleep. Everybody says that 15 minutes of hypnosis equal to about 3 hours of sleep. We've all heard it. We all have experienced it. But nobody's ever been able to research it, and it's not been researched. So there's a wide open field that I'm looking at right now. Other areas, of course, of childbirth, it's always been around, lots of research on that, using relaxation, hypnotic techniques there. And, of course, the National Institutes of Health have done a lot of research with hypnosis. They've reported their findings, especially in areas of its benefits in sleep and in pain management. Now, keep in mind that when you look at a lot of these research projects, a lot of them will intertwine the word relaxation, guided imagery, and hypnosis together. A recent article that came out was one about long bone healing, where they used a double-blind study, meaning one group did not know what the other group was doing, and the people working on them didn't know who got what. But the group that had hypnosis for fractures of either femurs or the tibias were out of the hospital about 2 weeks faster. They healed about 2 weeks faster, out of the hospital a couple of days faster, used a lot less narcotics, and just had an overall better experience.
You know, when I talk to some people in the field of hypnosis, I get all this fuzzy stuff and the anecdotal stuff, and that's one of the things I like about talking to you. Is you are a scientist, you're a medically trained individual that lives in both worlds, the world of science, research, good hard research, and application. You know, when I think about what you do, you're a guy that just not just talks the talk, but walks the walk, because you really use this scientifically based, outcome based research in your clinic to help people change their lives. Tell me a little bit about what happens when pain is no longer useful, and what do you start to do to evaluate that and decide to proceed along with using hypnosis?
Well, before I tell you that, I will tell you this. I've got two research studies going, one at Rush University and one at Bethesda, Maryland, where we're looking at the same outcomes using hypnosis for patients in surgery. But now let's go to your – in saying that, I forgot what your question was. And I hate to go back and say ask it again, but ask it again.
Well, what I'm curious about is a medical person, there comes a point that pain is useful – if there's a problem going on, but there comes a point where, as a medical person, the doctor or the nurse begins to say, okay, this is useless pain, and then you decide to move forward with hypnosis. Can you tell us a little bit about that process?
Yeah, that's a good one, because that's where I get involved a lot, and I apologize to the listening audience for that little senior moment. Let's keep in mind that pain does have a purpose. When it gets started, acute pain has a major purpose, if nothing else, to keep us from getting more damage. Let's say you're going to touch something hot, you jerk away before you get to the point where there's so much damage there that you have to have surgery or whatever. But, and let's say that when you've had surgery, the healing after surgery is the pain telling you, hey, let's take it easy with this area, let's not push it too hard. Or if you've broken a leg or you've had a stress fracture, even arthritis, some of these things that are saying, you know, you need to get off of that area, you need to take care of it. But once you've had pain for about 6 months in an area that doesn't have a reason for it being there, after 6 months it gets characterized or diagnosed as chronic pain. At that particular point, the understanding is that that pain actually serves no purpose. So therefore, most physicians, family practice physicians in particular, really don't know what to do with those patients. They send them to pain clinics. That's why so many freestanding pain clinics have just popped up all over the United States. Almost every town has one. Major, major dollars there to inject something into it to make it go away. But what's happening here is somewhere between where the pain got started, whether it was in the foot, the leg, in the arm, it doesn't matter. That pain gets sent to the spinal cord. When it gets to the spinal cord, it gets interpreted. And once it gets interpreted, then it sends a message to the brain. There is no pain until it gets to the brain. It's an electrical impulse. Once it gets to the brain, then the brain's got to make a decision. It's either got to ignore it, or it's got to send back a message. But for some reason, these pain loops get caused where the message that's getting sent to the brain is not being interpreted correctly, so therefore the brain is not sending out the endorphins or the melatonins and even the serotonins. All three of those neurotransmitters actually have pain relief properties to them. So therefore, if the brain's not getting the right impulse, then it can't send back, or it's not interpreting that impulse right, then it can't send back what it needs to do. Why hypnosis makes such a difference here is because of a part of the brain called the amygdala and the hypothalamus. It's a part of the limbic system. The amygdala is kind of, if you think of that word, think of fear. It protects us. Unfortunately, it's a little on the stupid side, because it magnifies everything, because it wants to make sure that we respond in a major way. You may think about that as a young child who gets hurt and he wants to make sure that everybody knows it, because he cries much, much more than he would need to send out that alarm. Well, that's kind of what the amygdala does to the brain. But on the other side, the amygdala, just like the rest of the subconscious system, doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's false. It's that amygdala that when you're sitting in a movie theater and it's a scary movie, a horror movie, and the hair stands up on the back of your neck, or you start jumping or you scream, it's because that amygdala has interpreted that not as something that's happening on the movie screen, but something that's happening to you as an individual, actually happening. So therefore, that's the amygdala's part. But we can influence the amygdala by talking to it. That's what makes hypnosis so wonderful, by bypassing that cognitive part of the brain and getting to the amygdala. Now, the hypothalamus is in charge of trying to maintain a homeostasis of the body. It has to do with emotions. It has to do with neurotransmitters. It has to do with the hormones that are created. It also has to do with us being able to turn off or rearrange what our thoughts are, our perceptions of what pain is. If the perception changes, then the pain changes. So therefore, I guess the simplest answer to say is the one thing that hypnosis can do is we can change the perception of that electrical impulse before it gets to the brain. And that's it in the simplicity and self-talk. Autogenesis, whatever word you want to use, self-hypnosis, auto-suggestion, all of these are ways that we talk to the brain, but yet, of course, the most magnified way is to use hypnosis and have a hetero-hypnosis, have an operator there helping you to get to that point. Does that help?
Well, I can see I asked a lot bigger question than I thought I was asking. Hey, let me ask you something. Does someone have to be able to say words like, what was that? Amygdala and hypothalamus and medulla oblongata to be able to help people with pain?
Yeah, I saw the water boy the other day, too. So the medulla oblongata is very important if you live in Florida and you got alligators. But really what we're talking about is a part of the brain, the limbic system. And if you've read any of Candace Pert's Molecules of Emotion and those type processes that we're talking about, then you can understand that every cell in your body has its own consciousness. Every cell talks to every other cell. Every cell has its own memories, its own genetic memories, its own DNA memories, and its own created memories. And a lot of these memories come from the hormones that are created again in another part of the brain called the hippocampus, which responds. The hippocampus, the hypothalamus, the amygdala all kind of report to the pituitary gland, which then sends out all the emotions to the stress responders. And the key now, I want you to keep take here, is the key is if we can, through that part of the brain, manage the stress or decrease the stress, then we have a major way of controlling or relieving the perception of pain or discomfort. So that's the whole key. Decrease the stress, you automatically decrease the pain.
You know, as we're talking about this, I'm just eating this up. I'm a hypnotist. I've done glove anesthesia. I know that the subconscious mind and the unconscious mind, that they're not unconscious. We're just not consciously aware of the consciousness, that unconscious mind is really our body consciousness. So I'm completely with you on this. I'm wondering about what does the majority of the medical establishment think about hypnosis, and I know this is a generalization, but what kind of feedback do you get from them? I know you do a lot of training with nurses and doctors and physicians' assistants. What do they think about this idea of hypnosis for pain management?
Well, first of all, the majority of the medical establishment don't think about it at all. That's a big part of our problem. And then a big part of those who do think about it are still living in the dark ages of hocus pocus and misunderstanding and witchcraft. And, of course, down here in the Bible Belt, it's the work of the devil. So keep that in mind. Interestingly enough, though, over the last year, I have spoken to some very major medical organizations. And we're talking about organizations with thousands of members. I spoke to the American Association of Ambulatory Care Centers, which are now looking at how they can have better patient outcomes with less time spent with a patient by utilizing some focused content preparing patients for surgery. I just spoke to the Association of Nurse Managers, which are all your nursing administrators around the country. They have been one of the biggest groups that in the past have kind of said, hey, you know, let's strict and stay focused on nursing, forget about all these alternative therapies, complementary therapies, adjunctive therapies. But now they're realizing that there's more going on, so therefore they're at least trying to learn and trying to get some information. Of course, the American Association of Nurse Anesthetists, because I've been belonged to that, just because of our background of dealing with hypnotic drugs and dealing with childbirth, we've always had an interest, and we've been a very far forerunner in the endorsement and spokesperson for hypnosis within our areas. But there's still a lot of people we have problems with. A simple thing like putting CDs on a patient's ears during surgery, you'll find that some nurses You can't do that. You can't do that without the patient's consent. So we always have our stumbling blocks. A lot of it comes down to one thing, and present yourself as a professional. Watch what you know as anecdotals as far as the things that you proclaim, and people will listen to you if you have success. And fortunately or not, the doctors here don't listen to me. But you know what they do? They listen, just as yours do, Cal. They listen to my clients when they go back, and then they send me more. And when a client calls me, one of the things I learned from you is I don't ask for referrals anymore. What I do is I ask them who their physician is, and I write a letter to that physician saying your client is asking to come and see, your patient is asking to come and see me for this. All you have to do is to sign right here to say it's okay for me to see your patient. And that's basically the simplicity of it. And once you get into one, they tell another, and they tell another. So it's going to be mostly word of mouth. We have to be very, very careful about the type of advertisements that we put out there, because there are those people, if you say you're relieving pain, the first question that comes up is, well, you know, what's your credential to do pain? Are you a physician? I'll let it go back to you now, Cal.
You know, we need to make sure that we're not interfering with appropriate medical treatment. And that's why we need the sign off by a doctor or other person who's licensed to deal with pain. But you know what? Like you were saying, you know, doctors are people too, and they want to help their patients. And when normal medical treatment doesn't help, they get frustrated. Some of them who are more open to this kind of thing will maybe refer people out to you or suggest hypnotists. But one of the best ways is when the clients come to us, then we get that sign off from the doctor. And then what are we doing? We're educating the doctors. And when we can show them success, then their mind opens up. I just want to get a little blurb in here about the National Health Freedom Coalition. And the National Health Freedom Coalition, I don't know if you know about them or not. I've been doing some work with them. But they're really out there on the behalf of consumers or people, let's say, who want to take control of their ability to decide what kind of treatment they get. So if you ever get a call from the National Health Freedom Coalition, I suggest you get behind them, because they're doing a lot of work to legislate so that people can take control over their health care and see alternative health practitioners, complementary medicine practitioners. Let me ask you another question. I don't think you've covered it. What's the biggest difference between how doctors treat pain and how hypnotists should treat pain?
Well, of course, doctors like to stick a pill in it, stick a needle in it. That's about what they know. And I guess it would be they look at it as only one thing, and that's a part of the body that hurts, and it's only that part. They don't look at it as being a part of a full organism that everything affects everything else. Now, some of them are starting to realize that mindfulness training may have something to do there. Now they're starting to realize that stress is a major underlying factor to a lot of these. But now we're talking time. A doctor usually spends less than 6 minutes with each of his patients. He has them stacked up out in the waiting room. He's rushing them through. They're there. Most of what they come for is going to be self-healing within 2 weeks anyway, at least 85% of them, up to 90% of them are. So most doctors don't really treat pain other than here's a ibuprofen, here's an aspirin, here's a Tylenol, here's some OxyContin. Most doctors who get stuck with any long-term pain management automatically turn them over to a pain center. This way they don't have to deal with it. And again, the pain center, most of them, I say most because a few of them aren't this way, but most of them only look again at the affected area and not at the mental processes that go with it. On the other hand, there are some out there, and this is what really got me started, that have a psychologist or some type of a mental health provider on that will run groups so that they actually can start allowing these people to do some cognitive responses, and also they will usually have some relaxation therapy with that. Unfortunately, most of these people are not trained in hypnosis. They're not trained truly in how pain creates its response within the brain. So therefore, it doesn't have the same outcome, beneficial outcome, that it would have with somebody as a hypnotist. And I'd like to say a comment about that. Being a hypnotist and being somebody who reads scripts is a big difference. And a lot of people feel like, you know, if I got a script to read for this, then I'm okay. It really takes a people knowledge. It takes being able to understand how these people feel about their pain, how they can rearrange their thoughts about their pain, what are the emotional responses of that pain. And if we're not willing to go there and understand that part of it, the feelings, as your books would say, then we're no different than that doctor who's only got 6 minutes. You know, for us to sit up and read a script and do a glove anesthesia is no different than him to pull out a needle and give a dose of morphine. Does that make any sense to you, Cal?
That sounds right on track for me. I'm kind of curious, can anyone who's received the right kind of training, like hypnosis training, you know, without being a doctor, can they learn to help their clients or even help themselves with pain management? Is that a correct thing to do?
Oh, I definitely think so. And I think so because somebody's got to fill that void. The psychologists aren't going to fill that void, I know. I just came back from a big meeting in at the University of North Carolina with a group of psychologists who were trying to learn how to integrate hypnosis into their psychology practice. The problem is they never learned how to do hypnosis to the biggest extent. A lot of them, of course, were social workers. I think that for a hypnotist, though, to think that, okay, I've had a 8-day, 9-day, 100-hour course, 150-hour course, or a lot of them, like me, went to 3-day courses, to come back and say, okay, here's what I was told, to do a glove anesthesia, to do relaxation, to say, go away, pain, or you no longer have pain, I think they're going to miss the boat, because that's really, to me, no different than the doctor coming in and spending a few minutes and saying, here, take this pill. The only thing that we're doing is saying, your pill is now me saying, in this hypnotic state, depending on just exactly where is that hypnotic state. Because the one thing I do know, whether they come for weight, where they come for smoking, where they come for pain, they are only going to listen to what they're only going to hear or listen to what they want to hear. I don't care how deep they are in hypnosis. They will always pull out that critical factor and block anything they don't want to hear. So you've got to understand that, and that's where I think the work that you do in 5-Path and 7-Path is so wonderful, Cal, is the fact that you let people go back. And maybe a lot of these pains are metaphors, just metaphors for things that happened to them as kids or young adults. So therefore, we need to be very, very aware of how to work with that. We need to be very alert as to how we're going to work with ab reactions. We need to have the experience of knowing how to talk to these same patients that have been to the doctors in the same language that their doctor does. Because what they're looking for in us as hypnotists, we are their last resort. They've tried everybody else. And we have to remember one last thing about that. All pain carries some type of reward. And to not refuse reward with secondary gain, they're not the same. Back to you, Cal.
Over and out. You're supposed to finish with over and out. Then I know. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you for mentioning 5-Path and 7-Path. Our hypnotherapists that are trained in 5-Path and 7-Path say that the work that they do with 5-Path and 7-Path melds just perfectly with the training they've received from you, either live or through the independent study course. I'd like to know a little bit more about when you're working with someone that has chronic pain, do you just work with them in a heterohypnosis, you know, one-on-one kind of thing, or is there a lot of self-hypnosis that is taught to the client or patient?
Well, without the self-hypnosis, you're just running up a blind alley. As a matter of fact, kind of the way I've set mine up right now is I start with them in 4 sessions, hopefully within 4 weeks. And within those 4 sessions, I start from the very beginning teaching them self-hypnosis. By the 3rd session, they have to come in and put themselves into hypnosis, and then I'll work with them. What I've started doing with those people, knowing that a lot of them need more than just 4 sessions, I now have a group which I call my healthy living group, and I kind of let everybody fit into that, whether weight, stop smokers, pain, phobias, I don't care who they are. I have a very minimal expense to that. They come in for a group, and what I really do in that group is I reinforce the self-hypnosis. I do stress management with that group. Even with my pain patients, I really use a lot of nutritional suggestions because they need to be eating right. I do a lot of what I call increased activity. They don't like the word exercise, but increased activity suggestions. So without that, without the self-hypnosis, without knowing how to breathe, simply most people don't know how to take a nice deep breath to really use the benefits of oxygen in the body. So one of the things that we want to do there is to teach them how to breathe, teach them how to relax, teach them how to refocus, teach them how to disassociate, and teach them distraction. If we can get all of those things in, then that becomes a part of their self-hypnosis. And without the self-hypnosis, it's a blind alley, and they're going to go away, and they're not going to do well 6 months later, even 2 months later. Over. You don't say out unless you're done. So over.
See, that's what I like about you. You're professional all the way. Hey, Ron, as you're talking about this, I'm thinking, could you just give us, like, maybe one or two or three examples of typical pain clients? Like, it sounds like some people might be post-surgical pain. Other people, there might be some unknown causes of pain or phantom limb pain. And then maybe just give us a thumbnail sketch of how someone would lay out a plan, you know, maybe a hypnosis pain clinic, you know, the procedures or the steps that from more of a hypnotist's point of view. What is the meat and potatoes of a pain clinic program?
Okay, let's start with the phantom limb pain, because those who bought the DVD set or have taken my course have actually seen a video on phantom limb pain from a person who had phantom limb pain for 15 years. The whole key here is you've got cell memory. His leg still remembers the trauma that he had. He's got some post-traumatic stress disorder still, and he's got a memory that keeps getting sent up to that brain. Remember I talked about the loop and that loop not being satisfied? Well, for phantom limb pain, you just disrupt the loop by allowing them to either remember that limb that's been removed and remember it as it felt when it was still there, still comfortable, still a part of the body. I had a guy come in not too long ago. Actually, it's the same person that was on the DVD. I still see him about once a month. And just because he likes to come in, he likes that reinforcement. And the last time I was here, he says, Ron, I tell you, I can feel that leg to the point I know that I could get up right now and walk out of here. And that's how real that leg is to him. Now, he's one that I see. I have another young lady, 24, beautiful girl, who at age 7 had all four of her limbs removed, right at the elbows and just above the knees. A very sad sight. But for her, and to really give an underline, everybody has to have self-esteem work. Ego strengthening. I use Heartland's basic right out of the NGH course, right out of Heartland's book. I use that as a part of every program that I do, whether it's pain or anything else, because everybody needs it. So we start with that. We start with sleep. One thing I can basically guarantee everybody is they're going to get a better night's sleep. So with him, we just turned off that pain at the spinal cord, just let him switch it off. We did all tons of other stuff, but those were the basic things we did, and then let him go back and remember what it felt like before, and I meant way before, not right before he had his amputations. He had two because he needed for that leg to remember what it was supposed to feel like. He'd forgot. It had been 15 years. Another lady I saw was more of acute pain. It's called shingles. And she came in with shingles. She'd had them for 6 months when I saw her. We videotape that one. That one will actually be coming out as a 1, 2, 3, 4 step on how to deal with shingles, with all the blisters showing up and everything around her neck, around her bra, around her chest. And with that one, again, we let her get rid of the stress, because it was the stress that was perpetuating this ongoing blistering from the shingles. And then we also, again, let her body remember from cell memory what it felt like. And I do a little thing that those have been in my course have seen called EMT. It's through a book by Freeberg. And I did that with them so they could get a left brain, right brain mixture of dealing with it from a logical view and being able to deal with it from the creative side. A third one that I saw recently was a young lady who had surgery, and this was 15 years later, and she was still having pain. She'd had two or three more surgeries. She had to go in and find out what they had done in her abdomen to continue with that pain. This was one of those cases where if people are not using it, I always use the a guided imagery of the lemon experience before I start, where I have them walking through the entire home. Those who have been in my courses are very aware of this, to allow them to experience eating a lemon again. The purpose of that's twofold. One is to find out what senses they use to take in information, and the other is to let them show that just through a thought, they create a biochemical physiological response in their body. And every thought that they have creates that biochemical response, that physiological response. So a negative thought, a painful thought, is going to create pain. And also they learned that every thought that they have creates a new neuron. And with that neuron, if you have more negative neurons than positive neurons, then you start catastrophizing. Nothing is ever going to get it better. So with her, interestingly enough, when I did the lemon, I said, I want you to imagine in your home, and she went into a hysterical fit of jumping around, screaming and yelling. I don't know how other people do it, but I have a tendency, if there's any reason not to, I had the husband in the room that day. I was glad I had him there. Otherwise, if he'd been out in the waiting room, he'd have been wondering what I was doing to his wife. Now, she was an example of somebody who had pain, who had a major secondary gain. As a matter of fact, in one of our sessions, her pain totally went away. And her first comment right in hypnosis was, my pain's gone. What will I do now? That was a big eye-opener for me. She had to have the pain to deal with other things in her life. So what we started doing with was dealing with those situations in order to take care of the pain. That was three. I see at least two or three pain clients each and every week, so I could give you numerous ones. Headaches, I've seen. I had one lady, I'll just throw this one in if you don't mind, who had headaches for 6 years. She had had them ever since she had had a spinal meningitis is what she had. So she was in a coma for 2 weeks. She was on a ventilator for 2 weeks. They thought she was going to die. And one of the doctors that I had just done a 30-minute, this is hypnosis, and these are things you can say in your office that will make a difference to your clients. He made some comments to her. He sent her to me, and because he prepared the road. That's a big deal if you're going to work with patients that come from physicians. If the physician says, hey, you know, this has been known to really work, you'll probably do well, as compared to a physician who said, well, I don't know if that'll work or not. I don't believe in it. But if you really want to try it, go ahead. But I don't think you'll do any good from it. The difference with those two attitudes is going to make a big difference in your success. She came to me. Her headache went away the first day. Second week she comes, she hadn't had a headache in all that week. And by the third week, she didn't even show back up. So I figured it either didn't work or she was upset. A week later, she showed up to her doctor and gave him all of her medicines. And then a week, I don't know how long later, I got a call from her physician back in Louisiana wanting to know what I had done to his patient, because he had about 70 of those patients. She was the only one that had gotten better. So the gamut of the different things, from simplicity of arthritis to my stomach hurts, I don't know why, to my headaches, to my eyes hurt, there's going to be some weird things come in. And some of them are going to have rashes. Even the Dermatology Association now had a speaker a couple of years ago that said, hey, you can take care of a lot of rashes and a lot of problems with hypnosis and dermatology, and wrote a pretty good article, and those people who've taken my courses have gotten copies of that article. So I'll just turn it back over to you, Cal, because I actually talked an awful lot here.
I know it's a good thing we have the internet, and that I have a T1 high-speed connection. I wouldn't be able to keep up with you. No, you just you got loads of information. I just love hearing this. We're going to be probably coming to a question-answer period pretty quick. Before we go, I'm going to put you on the spot. I want to make sure that this interview is something that everybody who signed on, everyone that listens to it on the website, is glad they did. So I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. Can you give us a technique, a simple technique that a hypnotist or a hypnotherapist could use tomorrow to help someone alleviate pain?
That was easy. Teach them how to breathe right and teach them how to talk right. I'm going to give you two techniques. The breathing right is on a 448 process, and it has to do with not really thinking about taking in a deep breath, which creates a lot of tension and anxiety. Try it sometime. Just take a big deep breath and watch how you bite down, your shoulders go up, your neck tightens up. The best way to take a nice breath is to just kind of push your stomach out, which drops your diaphragm, which creates a negative pressure, a vacuum, which now sucks air into your lungs. The important part of this, Cal and listeners, is the fact that now that oxygen in that air will get down into the two lower lobes of the lungs, which doesn't normally get a lot of air. Well, those two lower lobes of the lungs have a lot more blood vessels, will take a lot more oxygen to the cells and pull a lot more carbon dioxide, which is a stimulant, away from those cells. By getting more oxygen into the cells, you're going to decrease pain. Let me tell you what happens. When you're in stress, when you've got a knot in your belly, like in pregnancy, or if you've got fibromyalgia, which has knots, every time there's a knot, you close down the capillary's ability to get oxygen to those cells. Without oxygen, they start burning and they start in pain. One of the things that I have my clients do is just move their hand back and forth like this, and how easy it is. But now try to tense everything up and bring it back and forth, and feel how very quickly, after about three tries, it starts hurting and starts being uncomfortable because you've turned off or shut down the blood supply. Getting oxygen to the cells makes a difference. Why does a heart attack hurt? It hurts because we don't have oxygen getting to the cardiac muscle. Without oxygen, you have pain. Without oxygen, you have pain. The other process is, starting from the very beginning, is to have them to start talking to themselves in terms of feeling better. We all know that as we go to sleep at night, we go through a hypnotic state. That's the time that they need to be saying to themselves, I feel better every day, or visualize themselves doing something they would like to do and doing it comfortably, very much comfortably. Now I'm going to give you a third technique, and this one people think I'm silly, but it makes a major difference. I don't allow anybody to watch the late night news. My pain patients, I say, turn the news off. No MSN, no CNN, no local news, no news whatsoever for the next 2 weeks or while I'm working with you. Just from turning off the stress and the worry that comes from something they have no control over makes a major difference in their pain. Also, here's the first benefit they're going to notice, and this is the only thing I guarantee basically everybody, and I'll say it to them. Everybody that I've ever worked with, everybody, have come back and told me they slept better. So there's your four techniques. Sleep better, don't watch the news, breathe right, self-talk.
Well, you know, that's what I like. I like getting more than I ask for. And it sounds to me that any, you know, hypnotist that's had any kind of good training at all will be able to take those hints and write them up as a good hypnosis script that they could deliver to someone in hypnosis and make a change in how they're feeling tomorrow. Thanks a lot for that. Before I move on and to the questions, can you tell us a little bit more about two things? I want to hear about two things I think are very important. One, tell us a little bit about your distance learning course, and also you've got a course coming up in January, too. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Well, the distance learning course is on 8 DVDs for basically it's a two-day course that I'll be doing in January. And then with that, it's got a couple of CDs. One is the stress management CD that I give to every single one of my clients. They take home a progressive relaxation CD. I want to make one more comment about that. If somebody comes in, they're really hurting, you cannot use a progressive relaxation technique. They just can't focus on it. So the the quick inductions, the rapid inductions that Cal teaches are really great for that. The other course that I'm teaching in January is basically the course that I teach in August at the Guild. And I'll be teaching the course again on Monday and Tuesday. Originally, I was going to do it on Wednesday and Thursday, but I have to speak on hypnosis to the American Association of Nurse Anesthetists in, of all places, Cleveland. I grew up in Cleveland, by the way. Anyway, so I'll be up there doing that. Now, I've changed that course a little bit this year. I do read all of the responses I get and the evaluations. So it's going to be a whole lot more interactive and a lot more hands-on. The interactive course or the home study course is good in the fact that once you've taken the course, you belong to a group, and you can ask a lot of questions in the group. I'll take your phone calls and help you with stuff. I'll take your emails. I like that course because you can just listen to it over and over and over again. You can watch it. You've got two videos of me actually walking through step-by-step with a phantom limb pain. You see the techniques I've got. And the second CD with that course is everything I know I put on that CD. I put tons of information as far as articles, scripts, electronic charts, anything I could come up with to do that. I've also made one other change to that course. I'm giving three different certificates for that now. The first certificate is just certificate completion. Nobody has to be more than they've got that certificate. A second certificate is for somebody who just wants to do the test, and that's a certification. The third certificate is for practitioner, and that certificate means that you've actually sent me two tapes or two videos, whatever you want to send, of you working with the same client on two different occasions so that I know that if I'm endorsing you. I get a lot of calls from all across the country for people, who can you send me to for pain? I have a lot of people come from across the country come to see me for pain so that I know that. The course coming up in January. The course coming up in January is also going to be, gosh, I can't remember which month it is, maybe back in April or May. It's still a two-day course, the certification course. And I do it in my office. I keep it small so I can do a lot of individual work. I also have my office set up so we can let somebody work with somebody in the actual hypnosis treatment room, and the class can watch it out in the main office. It's set up on video cam for that. Usually I'll have somebody to come in, and I'll have a group come in. We'll do a whole group session with people that are coming in. So the one thing that happens within the office setting is you've really got me around the clock. I've got clients that have already been worked on, and I have new clients that you can work on, almost like a short internship. It's just, and you've got access to the books that I've got, so you can see what's there, and it's just a fun place. Those of you who have trained at Cal's know what it's like to actually go into a hypnosis clinic and be able to work where people are actually being seen. It's just a whole different process. So that's kind of the key. The one that's coming up in January right now is I've advertised it out to about 27,000 CRNAs, nurse anesthetists. So it really talks about how they would use it in their hypnotic talk. But also I sit down and go through 1, 2, 3, and 4 sessions of how to work with clients. So, and I do the same thing in the DVD course. Session 1, session 2, session 3, session 4. It's very well laid out, even with the materials that we hand out with that course. So I think that covers those two pretty good.
All right, good. Hey, you guys, also, I've synchronized the screen so that you can see Ron Esslinger's January class. We've got his classes list on the Banyan Hypnosis Mall so that you can read the details. Also, Ron Esslinger has been wonderful. He's now one of our staff writers for the Banyan Online Hypnosis e-zine, which is there so you can continue to catch up on what the latest is with Ron Esslinger and what he's teaching. Also, he's given us some free articles. And also, I'm going to show you a list of just a whole bunch of training items that he has on the website. I'll just be synchronizing your screen and you can look at that. But it shows everything from these courses he's talking about, his DVD set, pain management CDs, just all kinds of things. You can look at that. You can write down the just go to the Banyan Hypnosis Mall, and you can just stroll through there and find all those good things. All right, what I would like to do is there anything else you want to tell everybody about before we go to question and answers? Anything I might have left out or that you're thinking you'd like to talk about, Ron?
Only one thing. Don't be afraid of it, but educate yourself. Don't try to do this without getting the right education. Every year I find at least one course I can go to that's basically on pain somewhere. Last year I was lucky enough to get to go to one to Hilton Head where I did a two-day pain course. I took away about two very nice pearls and a real great process working with back pain. I just got back last week. I was at the University of North Carolina with Joseph Barber. If you've not read his book on pain management, it's a huge textbook. It's a great book. You need to get it. So there are some great people out there doing some great things. Find some of those courses. But I tell you what, I'd love to share everything I know with you. Come down to Tennessee and visit me. The weather is always beautiful.
Good. Okay. Let me now open it up to some questions. If you have a question, you can either type it in at the bottom of the screen and send that to us, or you can click on the Talk Now button.
Hi, Ron. Are there any dangers in teaching someone to use hypnosis to manage pain?
I'm assuming from that question you mean is there a danger in them using self-hypnosis to manage their pain? There is if you don't teach them in the very beginning that they will be aware if that pain changes and needs to be seen by a physician. They need to understand that. You can give them that for suggestion and then allow them to give themselves the same suggestion. If any time my pain changes to something that needs to be seen by a physician, my body will let me know and I'll know to have it seen.
What do you think of Dr. John Sarno's work?
Well, if you were to take my course, you would know I think everything there is to think about it that is good. I actually offer his book as a part of my course. I use his techniques in every process, in every pain patient, but I use his techniques in a lot of other patients. Remember the comment that I made about pain being a metaphor? I got that from Dr. John Sarno. And I use that technique in a little bit different way than he does. I let people, if they like the beach, walk along a timeline down the beach till they get back to that earliest age of happy memory. Once they tell me they reach that happiest memory at that earliest age, I'll ask them if they can take one or two more steps. I give them a few moments to do that. They either, and then I'll ask them, at what age are you now? They'll either say, you know, anywhere from I had an 18-month one time. A lot of them will stop at 3 or 4 years because at 3 and 4 years they really are aware of what their age is. And then I have them walk back, and I have them to walk back and be able to experience all the angers and rages of their life. But to see them not as a child, but be able to handle them as an adult. And I allow the adult self to walk back with the child as the mentor, as the protector. And then I warn them that many of the things that they have to deal with, they will have remembered, but there will be some things that they may not have remembered, but they'll be able to handle those without any problems, and they'll be able to handle them very adequately and take their time. And if they want to talk to me all the way back, they have to, and that they do not have to share anything that they experienced with me at all. I love his book. I love his techniques, and I teach his technique as a part of my class.
You know, I also recommend Dr. John Sarno's books to all of our grads, and my grads have commented on the similarities between my book, The Secret Language of Feelings, and his idea that pain can just serve as a distractor from internal problems such as anger, and how having a chance to talk about it in hypnosis or even just talk about it in the normal waking state or express those feelings can take care of pain. So it's not just suggestions of suggesting away pain or blocking pain, but also dealing with those underlying emotional issues. And I know, because I've seen your course, I was here when it was being recorded, that you are completely in sync with that idea.
You can't get away from the emotions and feelings, because we talked about the hypothalamus earlier. And the hypothalamus, which has a lot to do with the regulation of the hormones, the neuroreceptors that go out to fight pain, down the nerve roots, they are very, very responsive to what our emotions are. So therefore, we always have to include the emotions in the things that we deal with.
Well, I guess I'd just like to say, as a person who's taken Ron's courses, that this the information that he gives absolutely really works wonderful. I've worked with many pain clients, and I finished my work with a client just last week that I'm using for my practitioner videos to send to Ron. And this person has been in pain in to the hospital at least 2 to 3 times a week to get shots of morphine because of chronic kidney stones, and they cannot tell where the pain's at. So they sent her to a neuropsychiatrist, and the neuropsychiatrist gave her the referral to come to me, and she went back to the neuropsychiatrist pain-free, and he's just totally amazed. And so now I have an avenue to speak to the neuropsychiatrist about referring more patients.
And I'd like to make a comment about that, because, Roberta, you were a wonderful student, as always. But interestingly enough, what you may not be aware of right now is the fact that a lot of the physicians and the psychiatrists are really being observed for the fact that the amount of OxyContin and oxycodone that have been being sent out. So now they're looking for a way, because their credentials, they put a lot of people on a lot of medicines that have gotten them hooked and become addicts. And it's a major issue right now within our country. So they are looking for something, and all we have to do is have the type of success Roberta just had, and word gets around. They do talk to each other.
Hi, Ron. Question for you. Are there some people who should not use hypnosis for pain, and is it addicting?
No, there is nobody who should not use hypnosis for pain, even acute pain or dangerous pain, as long as they are aware of the fact or the physician is aware of the fact. Now, I will give you an example where I was asked to use hypnosis for a very dangerous pain on board a ship because they were afraid to give the person any Demerol or morphine because it would mask the symptoms. But even though we relieved the pain to a great degree with hypnosis, it did not mask the symptoms that the surgeon needed in order to decide whether or not to do surgery. So that would be one example where it can be used for any pain at any time. Now, on the other side of that, is it addicting? It is not addicting in the fact that we get addicted to the chemical responses that our body is thinking for from morphines and other addicting drugs. Keep in mind that most people, when they get addicted, do it for one of two reasons. Number one is they get this wonderful, peaceful, euphoric high from a medication that they keep trying to recreate, and they never really truly do recreate it to that degree. Same with alcohol. On the other side, the addiction to hypnosis is not an addiction, but it is a wonderful, an absolutely wonderful tool that can be used at any time, in the same manner that Motrin can be used as a wonderful tool, as long as you take it with something to eat and you don't end up bleeding out from all the blood loss. Keep in mind that unlike medications, morphine causes constipation and you can't drive. That doesn't happen with hypnosis. Hypnosis has, quote, no side effects except what it's used for, and that's euphoria, comfort, stress management, and better sleep. And thank you, Maureen. It's always such a pleasure to see your face.
All right. Any other questions out there before we have Ron wrap it up for tonight?
Cal, it's Bruce from Australia. I dropped into the room late, so I apologize if the question is already covered. But what level of trance is required for elimination of pain?
Interesting that you brought that up, because I don't think it truly needs any particular type level of trance unless you're looking to get glove anesthesia. So you know you got to go to at least a 4. I've had people that I wasn't even sure ever went into hypnosis, but they come back and tell me what a great week they had. Sometimes just getting rapport, getting them to breathe right, getting the stress out of their system, getting them to sleep is really all that they need. And a very light level of trance, giving those suggestions, will put them on a path of being compliant with actually the things that their doctors are having them to do. We haven't covered that, but I think one of the things that I talk in terms of with my clients is for them to be compliant with their physicians. Because if they're compliant with their physicians and doing what he tells them to do, then all that's going to do is complement what I'm doing, and I'm complementing what he's doing. Does that help?
That certainly answers my question from that part. Does ultra-depth featuring pain management in your techniques?
I think ultra-depth will make a major difference for a lot of people, especially if they're having ongoing pain with never any relief within the middle of it. Ultra-depth, if you've got somebody that is, say, arthritis, would make a big difference. Because in arthritis, even though there's a cause for the pain, there's no treatment for the pain. And it doesn't make the problem worse if they use the joint. So therefore, ultra-depth, stage 5, stage 6, deep stage 4, for those type of processes that are very uncomfortable, but yet if a person could utilize that joint, they may do better, would definitely be much more endorsing to the client or the patient that what they're doing is working. Well, let me give you another example. How about a burn patient? Ultra-depth in a burn patient would be the greatest thing you could do. There's nothing more severe than a major burn, and you put one into a trance of ultra-depth and just let him stay there and let him relax because he can't move. That would be a wonderful place. Or a person who's been put into a contraption for orthopedic compliances that have to lay in bed. That would be a great place for ultra-depth. Just for time distortion would be a major issue there too. So, yes, there is a place for it. Is it necessary in everyday practice? Rarely do I have a person that needs to get into ultra-depth because the simple getting into stages 3 and 4 is really all they need, even stage 2 for a lot of them, to get the relief benefits. Keep in mind, all pain has some type of reward. You got to get around that reward also.
Bruce, thanks a lot for that question. It's always good to have someone online video conferences here from Australia. You have good questions. One of the things I learned, or what I liked hearing clarified there, Ron, is one of the things is if we're going to create anesthesia, which is really a form of primary hypnosis where we want to create an effect in hypnosis, then we need a stage or level 4, 5, or 6. But one of the things I pointed out in a recent article in the Journal of Hypnotism is that there's the three levels of the mind. Of the three levels, the conscious, the subconscious, and the unconscious mind, the part that helps us experience pain or not experience pain, is the most suggestible level of the mind. And if you are working in even the lightest stages of hypnosis, you can get a post-hypnotic effect with the unconscious level of the mind. So I really liked hearing you articulate that.
Oh, I'm glad you brought it up, and I apologize that I didn't, because what we're really talking about is the pain is there. It's just that the mind doesn't receive it. We've seen that in so many other areas of the fact that if the subconscious mind's not getting the message, we also then it can't respond to it. But who chooses whether or not it gets the message? Well, the body chooses, but yet at the same time, we can also choose then to ignore it. Okay, that hurt. Now it's going to go away because I got distracted or I went somewhere else. And I think that part of the brain, until the critical factor starts sending it a message of almost like catastrophizing, making it worse. I really love that article you wrote, by the way, and the video that you shared with me about that. And it makes all the sense in the world because you don't have to be at a very deep state to just ignore it. And that's really what it comes down to. You distract and disassociate. One of the most important things about working with pain is learning disassociation for the client, which is a form of self-hypnosis. And a lot of these people have learned to do that. They just haven't learned how to utilize it properly with their hypnosis, with their pain. So thanks for bringing that up, Cal, because you don't have to be very deep. And I found out that a lot of people, well, I couldn't work with their pain because they wouldn't get to a stage 5 or stage 6. you know, I don't even worry about stages. I want to make sure they understand their thoughts create changes. I want to understand that their thoughts will determine severity or non-severity. I want to understand that they have control. It's that loss of control and helplessness which creates a lot of the problem. So therefore, you don't have to be that deep. Unless you're going to do surgery, of course, that makes a big difference.
Wonderful. Hey, Ron, I know that your time limited is how much time you can spend with us tonight. So why don't you wrap it up and leave us with what you want to leave us with for tonight, and then we'll wrap up this interview program.
Thanks, Cal. I think that if I wanted to leave you with anything, it's the fact that hypnosis is such a wonderful tool for pain management. It works. Hypnosis, you will get more benefit out of working with pain because you'll get almost a instant response from the patient. Whereas weight management, you got to wait. Yeah, I've noticed I'm eating different, but the weight's not gone. Stop smokers, most of them don't want to stop to start with. They're looking for an excuse. And most of you already know that unless you really, really do a good job of filtering out, no pun, who comes, the success is going to be minimal. With pain, I've just never had anybody that did not have some success. And the way I'll start with is I'll ask them two questions. Number one, if you drop 2 points on your pain scale, which we've now changed to your comfort level, 10 being the highest, 1 being the lowest, if you drop 2 points, so you drop from an 8 to a 6, what would you do different? What would change in your life? That becomes the suggestions I give for that time. Also, then we'll talk in terms of, I forgot what the second point was I was going to tell you, but we're going to talk in terms of, I ask them, what would you have to do to me to make me feel the way you feel? I got that from Bill Brewer out of Louisville, Kentucky. And then I have them to describe it. If they got a headache, they're going to turn the wrench. They're going to put me in a vise. And then in hypnosis, we'll let them undo it or untie the knots. So your upfront conversation, the book I would highly recommend is Cal's book, Hypnosis and Hypnotherapy. Every one of my students has to read that because it teaches the introduction. And I don't mean the introduction to hypnosis, but the interview. Because your script is going to come from your interview with that patient, that client. So if you're going to work with pain, you've got to understand how to pull from them the things you're going to feed back to them. What would you do differently if you were 2 points less? What would you have to do to me to make me feel the way you feel? And other than that, I'd love to see you at one of my classes someday. I'd love to see you or come up and talk to me when we get to Nashua back in August. And my email's listed with Cal. Give me a call. Or go to my website, and we'll talk. Listen, y'all have a great time. Have a good evening, and I'll turn it back over to Cal now. That was real good bringing that up, Cal. I love that book, by the way.
All right. Ron, thank you so much. You're a good friend of mine. I look forward to seeing you. And I know that this is going to be one of the most popular recordings posted on the Banyan Hypnosis Mall in the Meet the Pros interview program. All right, this is Cal Banyan signing off with Ron Esslinger. You guys have a good night. Send us email letting us know how much you love this program. My email is Cal Banyan, B-A-N-Y-A-N, at hypnosiscenter.com. All right, everybody, you have a wonderful evening, and go out there and help somebody get rid of pain.